So, as I began with the story of the brahmanas who were engaged in a sacrifice, they were engaged in the sacrifice to elevate themselves to higher planetary systems. And they had performed great austerity. They had fasted. They had taken ritualistic baths. They were dressed in particular clothes. And they chanted many mantras. And it wasn't easy at all. Mantra after mantra. They deprived themselves from sleep. And even throughout the night, they faithfully chanted mantra after mantra. And they did not doze off. They stayed firm in their concentration. Yet, these brahmanas were performing this sacrifice to raise themselves from this planet to higher regions in the universe where life is full of pleasure, full of opulence. The realm of the devatas. In the realm of the devatas, one day of their time is the same as 6 months of ours. And they live 100 years of that time. That was a very long time, that's for sure. So, in this way, and life is very pleasurable because there is no old age, there is no disease. Basically, their bodies are pleasurable. Here, it's a struggle. Their life is just sweet and easy. So the brahmanas were eager to attain that goal, that elevated goal, and to attain bodies which were of a more refined nature than the human bodies that we have here. They desired celestial bodies. And who would not desire? Ladies, like you have not seen in this world. Nothing can compare. Nothing. There, beauties, unlimitedly more beautiful than here, are existing and ever young and ever fresh. Yes, but then all good things must pass, right? Then it comes to an end. Ksine punya marcha lokam visanti. Then, again, the punya runs out. What is punya? Punya means pious credit. Pap means sinful credit. The sinful credit brings us suffering. The sinful credit brings us poverty. The sinful credit brings us pain. The sinful credit brings us accident, disease, and so many other types of suffering. But the punya brings us good fortune. The punya brings us health, brings us strength, brings us beauty, brings us learning, brings us a comfortable life, the punya. And when the punya is great, one can attain these celestial regions. But even although there one lives such a long time compared to here, ksine punya marj lokam visanti, one day it's over. One's pious credits have been used up as a battery that is empty and the phone is about to die. In the same way, it's over. At one point, and one falls from those celestial regions down again to these planetary systems, which are the middle planetary systems where we now reside. So, these brahmanas, they were desiring to attain that celestial destination. When the cowherd boys came for Krishna and Balaram and asked for some offerings, no, they would not give. But when the wives of the Brahmanas were approached, they immediately gave. It is said that they came out, they carried golden pots with crystal lids, and they tied them in white cloth and carried them on their hands, like this all the way. And although it was heavy and difficult to carry, somehow or other the enthusiasm was so great, they didn't feel any discomfort like that. So they were very eager to meet Krishna and Balaram. Why was it so? It was so because these ladies, they used to purchase milk, butter and sweets from the gopis, who used to come to their doors with pots filled with these things. And because they purchased it from them, therefore, they became purified by the association of a devotee, and they also developed a desire to serve Krishna. So that is the key. Without the association of a devotee, who wants to serve Krishna? Who thinks of such a thing? Serving? What's so good about that? But somehow or other, serving Krishna is quite amazing. It is said that the reward for serving Krishna is more service to Krishna. That's the only reward. So there's no, it's not about celestial regions, it's not about wealth, it's not about health, it's not about anything. It is service. The award for service is more service. That's it. That's all. Yes. That's the perfection. More service. Yes. So, we desire more service. And that service is the greatest satisfaction. There's nothing better. See, service to Krishna is so satisfying that one wants more. And it increases. It's like, it may begin hesitantly, where we say, okay, yes, I'll do something, I'll peel some potatoes, or I will clean a floor, something like that. But gradually, it becomes more. Because gradually, we begin to understand, what is Krishna's purpose? What does Krishna actually desire? What is his aim? Aham savasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matabhajante mam buddhabhava samanvitaha. Says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the origin of all the spiritual worlds, all the material worlds. Everything is emanating from me. So everything is emanating from Krishna. What is his purpose? Here we are in this world. Maya jakshena prakite suyate sachara charam. Not a blade of grass is moving without the will of the Lord. Then, why is he doing all these things? And the world being as it is, to somehow or other bring all living beings to the point where they are ready to once again take up devotional service. Something we've given up long ago, but Krishna's aim is to bring us back to that point. Do I want it? In the beginning, we are not sure. But in the association of devotees, it seems to be amazing, and it is sort of, it is something, just like we are singing, and nice tunes that in itself are kind of, carry a lot of taste. So we are having fun with these tunes and the Maha Mantra. But more than just that, there is transcendental potency. And you get purified, you get uplifted. So there is a transcendental dimension The same with prasadam. You know, tasty, but also a transcendental dimension. And little by little, that transcendental dimension opens up to us. In the beginning, we get a hint. But as we are engaging in service, little by little we begin to see that transcendental dimension more and more, and we begin to see it as a reality. In the beginning we think, well, how do you know that it's really true? But after some time, why still chanting? Why didn't we stop? It's music. Sang so many songs before that I don't sing anymore now. Yeah, it's true. Many songs I used to sing, some I used to sing every day, but I stopped singing them. But still singing is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Still wearing the same clothes. Is it not boring? The same clothes every day? It's a little variety, you know. It's like different garlands and things like that. Yeah, there is variety, but the basic thing is the same, and that's all right. But how can you wear the same clothes every day? Yes, other people have to change, you know. Black hat, you know, black jacket, white pants. Slick shoes. For example, different varieties of dress. Hair this way, that way, conch shells. So much variety. Pins, sunglasses, right? Striped shirts, blocked shirts, radical neck beads. So much variety. Then, you know, you can go the renounced Babaji way and wear no sewn cloth. And tie a piece of cloth with knots in all kinds of ways. There's an art. I mean, you know, you can tie it at the top, you can tie it here and there. Then the bottom piece, you tie it, but the little piece you keep loose, and you flap it back up, and you tie that also. And then you've got like a big pocket here, like a kangaroo in the front. And you can keep all kinds of handy things there. I tell you, it's cool. You can do all kinds of cloth tying tricks. Dhotis also, you know, there are many styles. Dhotis, saris, it's like Gujarati style that is Bengali style, Bengali saris. Well, I mean, you know, it's been a while since I've worn a sari, but you need some keys at the end, right? There's a point, you tie a ring with some keys to the point, so there's some weight. And then you carry it over the head, right? It goes underneath here, you know, and it comes up. And you throw it over the shoulder like a child. And it stays there because of the keys. Bengali, cool, you know. Oriya, you know, the ladies, they pull a tail up the sari, just like the guys with the dhotis, you know. So there are many varieties, many different possible styles that we can try. But basically the same. Because we are satisfied with this identity. A different dress, a different identity. That's what it's all about. Different person. Change dress, you know. You see all these men sitting here in their devotional clothes. Put them in a suit. Right? And suddenly say, good afternoon, sir. Whereas when they come, it changes according to the dress. Our role changes. So we want to change roles because we're not satisfied with the one we have. But when it's spiritual, satisfying. No need to change. Because the transcendental adventure doesn't reach the limit. Everything else reaches the limit. But The transcendental adventure always has a greater limit. There is no limit. Limit means you can go this far and not further. But in devotional service, you can go further and further. And you take on more service. Each service that we do is a preparation for a bigger service. Whatever we do today is a preparation for something bigger. And first, we take care of things. And then, we begin to take care of people. When we begin to take care of people, then we are really carrying something. When we are trying to look after many, many people in Krishna consciousness, yes, then we doing the biggest service. So, in this way, our service increases and increases. There's no end to it. We see that there's always a bigger challenge, always more. And that's why, if we then try, there's always new heights, right? Kirtan also, it's always a new melody. That's just, a little more, that's just totally on the cutting edge. And then another one, there's no end. So that's devotional service. No end to, no limit to bhakti.
And yeah, Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna is always in transcendental bliss. He says, Krishna is Satsit Anant, he's eternal. He's full of knowledge, and he's full of bliss. And Prabhupada explains, he says that the living being who takes up devotional service, he realizes the same nature as Krishna. And he almost gets the same like Krishna. Says, just like the servant of the king almost shares in the same opulence of the king. Yeah. He also lives in a palace. Also eats royal food, also wears fancy dress, it's a servant of a king, right? And in a way, he shares in the royal opulence. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, the devotee shares in all the unlimited opulence of Krishna, which is an ocean of transcendental bliss. So that is why devotees become blissful. And this blissfulness is what keeps us going. Sometimes though, it is said that the word Krishna comes from akarsan, which means to attract, and that the name Krishna means all attractive. But sometimes we feel that not only Krishna is all attractive, but Maya also. And we're sort of in between both. We look left, attracted. We look right, also attracted. Now what? When you're attracted to both, to Krishna and Maya, what do we do then? Then Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj gave the answer to that, right? By describing a dream of two dogs that were fighting. Two dogs were fighting. And the question was, which dog will win? Two dogs are fighting. Which one will win? Which one? Two dogs. You must. I told you enough. You can answer the question. Two dogs are fighting. Two dogs are fighting. Which one will win?
The one with your feet.
You Googled it. Yes. The one that we feed. Obviously, the one that we feed, he will win. So that is a fact. When we are in between both, the one that we will feed will win, and then the one that will starve, that one will become weak. When we are in between both, Krishna and Maya. As simple as that. So if we feed our Krishna consciousness, then Krishna consciousness will win and we will become more and more blissful. And that's the challenge of life. That's the challenge of life. And of course, everybody is an individual. And everyone has individual desires, individual needs, and individual nature. And everyone has to do, express that nature. You can't suppress that. You have to express your nature. But somehow or other, within devotional service. It's just like, I have to sing. I have to do it. Even if you tell me, Kadamakana Swami, today, it's not allowed to sing. And when you're not watching, I'll quickly sing. Yeah. It's like Manasi Ganga told me at the beginning, half hour chanting, and I looked at her like, half hour? Like, you know, I mean, come on. don't take it like criticism. That's not, because that's sort of standard, you know, in many programs. But I just can't fit myself in half hour. It's just not possible. That's a shoe that's too small. It doesn't fit because I'm an addict when it comes to kirtan. So our natures, you can't stop our natures. But before I was singing other things. Before I also sang, but not about Krishna. Different songs. Some were a little philosophical. Old hungry eyes have told me many lies. But maybe this one time, I will be satisfied. Here we go again. It's true that the eyes tell us lies. The eyes, they say, this is it. And then, not quite. Then looking for more. So anyway, we just engage our nature and connect with Krishna. That is what it means to feed the dog that serves Krishna, to feed the devotee identity. Yeah. So engage our nature, but use it in the service of Krishna, and then we can, may still be some struggle, but because we may still feel the attraction of Maya, but still, somehow or other we have to do that, and whatever way you want to fill in your life, that's up to you. Some people live in a temple and relate to the world outside. Some people live in the world outside and relate to the temple. That's an individual choice. And one can be a devotee in both conditions. That is to say, whatever works the best for us, you have to see, to experiment. Some people do well outside and relating to temple. Some people don't do well at all. They do good in a temple. So one has to find a natural situation. It said that a Vaishya, no matter what it is, right? No matter what it is, he'll make money. He'll think of ways to make money. Like I know someone, he had long hair, and I was preaching to him, and I told him to shave it off, right? And then he did. And then what he did, he sold it. He sold it. And he got quite some money for it. He donated that to me. That was kind of him. But I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was over $100, I remember that. Yeah, because they want hair, long hair especially, for making wigs. So he sold his hair. Vaishya. Yeah. Nobody else thought of that, you know, hair, you shave it up, or whatever, and cut it off, throw it away, you know. but he was a Vaishya. He saw how to turn it into money. Right? That's the spirit of a Vaishya. He always will turn everything into money. And then you cannot tell such a person, you know, money, money, don't be so materialistic. No, he must make money, but he must give it to Krishna. Like that. Our natures, I must sing, but sing for Krishna. Yeah? We have Burijan Prabhu, and Srila Prabhupada sent him to Hong Kong and to preach and open a temple in Hong Kong, and it was very difficult because he was all alone. So he's really like, feeling very, one devotee in a city all by himself to preach. So he ran away a few times and Prabhupada sent him back. And he was back in Hong Kong and he said, I can't do it anymore. I'm just all alone. Prabhupada said, okay, no problem. I'll send you a wife. And 2 weeks later she arrived and she landed and he picked her up on the airport and she said, I'm your wife, pleased to meet you. And they're still married. And the wife actually used to be a movie star. Prabhupada gave her a movie star wife. Right? And she was Australian and she played in a movie with Mick Jagger, you know, from the Rolling Stones. Right? She was his counterpart, right? In the lead role with Mick Jagger. And then there was a big newspaper article. And it showed her in her old dress, you know, like low cut and everything, as movie stars have. And then next to it, the sari, you know. And then they showed that article to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada, and she was like totally embarrassed. Oh no, now he's seeing me in this dress, you know, this like not very devotional. And Prabhupada looked at it and said, oh, she looked so sad on this picture, and now she looks so happy. That was his comment. Anyway, but she became a devotee, and Prabhupada just sent her off to marry someone she didn't know. And that's what happened. And they're still married. That's the amazing thing. So, just see. Somehow or other,
we have to find a way.
You know, there is Saint Francis of Assisi, and his last words sort of summarized, boiled down to this point. I gave you everything, now find your way. So I like this a lot. I like this point a lot, because I think it is like that. You know, we can give you the entire Bhagavad Gita and so on. But at the end, you have to find your way. You have to find your way. Because it's your life and you're an individual. And you have to make a life with the Bhagavad Gita, around the Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, no one can say, oh, you know, you cannot say, this is not for people from Mozambique, you know. People from Mozambique, they speak Portuguese, you know. For them, no. The Bhagavad Gita is not for them. It's for everybody else, but not for people from Mozambique. You can say, no, it's not like that. It's not a matter of a cultural fit. You cannot say, the Bhagavad Gita culturally doesn't fit. Yeah? I mean, it wasn't that Arjuna was initially thinking that the Bhagavad Gita was a perfect fit. Eh? Arjuna rather was lamenting, right? Senayor upadyor maje, and Krishna was prahasam, and Arjuna was visidantam. Krishna was laughing in Kurukshetra, smiling, and Arjuna was all depressed. And Arjuna really didn't want to do all these things, and Krishna gradually had to convince him. Right? So it took a little while. Only at the end of the Gita is Arjuna prepared to surrender and to actually follow Krishna's will. So With that point I want to make, even if Arjuna wasn't immediately ready to surrender, nobody is. That's my point. Nobody is. Everybody's in the same boat. Like, you know, I'm definitely too Dutch to follow something like the Bhagavad Gita. Some may be, you know, for some it may be too outdated, too old-fashioned, the Bhagavad Gita. When you're from India, how can you live like in such an old-fashioned way now in modern times? Yeah, these are all issues, you know. So, everyone, for himself, has to take the Bhagavad Gita and make it work. How? That is up to us. We have to figure it out. We can ask advice to friends, but we have to figure it out in a way. That's it. Because we have to find, like, well, what do I need? It's like you may... So the other day I was talking to someone and I made the point. Once you have come to the decision in your life that you say, I want to be Krishna conscious, then what else? What else do you need? What else should be part of it? You know? And it depends. For some people, a computer, you know, has to be part of life. And they say, oh yeah, and a wife as well. In that sequence, you know? you know, what can we say? But you see my point, besides the jokes, that you have to decide what you want to carry along in your luggage. What do you need in your life? That you know. I don't know. I can imagine some things from experience and seeing others, we can guess that we can do, and we can give some advice, but ultimately we have a personal responsibility to take the Bhagavad Gita and make it part of our life. And that is feeding the proper dog, that is feeding spiritual life, that is how we will become devotees. So you have to choose for it. And cannot think, oh, for me it's extra difficult. No, I think it's extra difficult for everybody. It's extra difficult for everyone. Everyone has some extra special problems. Namely, a mind. Namely, some senses. Namely, these things, the mind and the senses, these are like the reasons why we can't, why it's so difficult. That's really what makes it very difficult. Otherwise, you cannot say, it's difficult for me to be Krishna conscious because I'm poor. That's not a problem. You can be poor and Krishna conscious. Alright, it's difficult for me to be Krishna conscious because I'm rich. No, you can be rich and Krishna conscious. You can do it anywhere, any place. Anyone can do it. Anyone. Well, as simple as that. It's just a matter if we want to. If first of all we want to be Krishna conscious. If we're not so sure that we want to, then we are. Then the association of devotees can help. Because devotees have a desire to serve Krishna. And in that association of those who have a desire to serve Krishna, our desire will also develop. When we are with people who are into kirtan, and then we also say, well, this is this is a magic thing, because so much enthusiasm is here. If you take the tune home and you go, it doesn't carry the same enthusiasm.
is sort of a little, after a while, it helps if you can't sleep, then
recommend that melody.
But otherwise.
So, the enthusiasm of the devotees, because they have a desire. They have a desire to chant, they have a taste for chanting, they have a taste for service. And because of that enthusiasm, we also get a desire. That makes it magic. Yeah. And so that is devotional service. Yeah. That's devotional service. So any questions? How do you keep the taste for chanting?
How to develop taste for chanting?
Well, you know, say you get a little bit of taste, and then how to keep it? Well, somehow or other, for most of us, not for everybody, but for most of us, kirtan is easier than japa. And, well, in kirtan, you know, every once in a while, you need a real good singer with a real good melody, you know, and then and a good beat, and then, yeah, then that keeps you going for a while. So we need special kirtans, good kirtans, also. So yeah, sometimes you have to travel a little for that. And if you've got no money, well, then YouTube. And but there is good local kirtan. Bhima is legendary, for example. And no, he's definitely in his own league. It's like something extraordinary. And so many others, you know. Rasgraj, drums, and Fraj got the stamina. Fraj can go full force for 2 hours. Rasgraj for 15 minutes. But very artistic. So different. Another thing is participation. Yeah. I mean, it is said that when the Ganga came from the heavenly, from the into the universe, huh? It was a crack made by Vamana's toe. The shell of the universe cracked, a drop of the causal ocean came into the universe, and it came down, and that was the Ganga. When the demigods saw it, they caught that water in celestial pots, and they carried that on their heads, and they brought the Ganga downwards. And then, okay, then they threw it down. On planet Earth, no one did anything like that. Ganga came, okay, people took their bath in the Ganga. Then Ganga still goes further, to even the lower regions, this time under the name Bhogavati. But there, nobody even knows the transcendental nature of the river. So, the demigods, they took the most advantage of the mercy by becoming part of it and distributing it. They were actively partaking. Then the human beings on this planet, they sort of passively partook in the mercy, but didn't distribute it. And then in the lower planetary system, they got the mercy, but they didn't even know what they were getting. So with kirtan, it's the same. Yeah. Some people don't even know what they're getting, and you think, you know. One time, we were on a boat on the sea, and there was no wind, it was a sailing boat, and we had to go on the engine. And we had a large group of devotees, it was a big boat, and we decided to do a kirtan. So we had to go 30 hours until we came to some channel, and we had to go in a sluice gate where the water level goes down, you know. So we came, and this was in North Germany. So we come with our boat in this sluice gate. There was not a single human being. There's just this sluice gate, and upstairs there was a control tower. You know, and we had done 30 hours kirtan. So when we came in that sluice gate, there were concrete walls all around it, so the echo was incredible. And at that time I was leading the kirtan, the finale, and it was rocking, it was steaming, it was cooking, it was shocking, and it was just going strong, right? So we're just in this sluice gate, going over and over this, you know, in this tune, and it's really cooking. And then suddenly this voice comes out of the wall over a loudspeaker. Do you have any other tune? So, yeah, that's the materialist, you know, who cannot appreciate, who thinks, oh, what kind of music is this, you know, monotonous, same thing, repeating, you know, because they're not participating. So participation is a big thing. You can even learn to play harmonium. Why not? It's not so hard. No, it's easy. Can you or Badanga?
Could I shake up rules teaching you both harmonium?
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen old African grandmothers on the djembe, you know, doing serious, so no problem. Huh?
Pastor Raj can also teach Madanga.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible teacher. I tried, don't worry.
Not a teacher. Mm. What to do? Can't be everything, but otherwise very talented. Anyhow, so the point is the participation. And the more we, you know, if we learn to play these musical instruments, and then you learn different melodies and so on, and it gives a lot of satisfaction and absorption. You practice it, and by the, you know, to get it down, and in that way you get really absorbed in the whole thing. And then even after some time, then even the chanting of japa goes easier. As a result of all that kirtan. Anyone else? Yeah.
With the situation of the good dog and the bad dog, is there hope for someone who gradually feeds the good dog more? Like, let's say.
Okay, I got it. Okay. You're feeding both dogs, but one you feed a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. If you feed both dogs, but you feed one more, then that one. Yeah. Yeah, it's like scales, you know, at the end. Wherever you put the most weight, it will tip that way. Yeah. That's the other example, the scales. So, you just invest in spiritual life, you see. I mean, sometimes it's very difficult to just overnight give up material life and so many things, and we have some attachments, and we just can't give it up. We know we should, but what to do? I was in France 1 year, and that year, the final of the World Cup was between France and Brazil, and I was in the temple. That's quite a long time ago. He's trying to remember which year that was. Anyway, we're in the temple, you know, and of course this is Maya, you know, football, right? So nobody was going. But some devotees, about 2 hours before the match, went for a japa walk in Carmel. Anyway, the remaining devotees in the temple said, it's Maya, you know. It's Maya. It's like, you know. But then, as the time for the match came close, you know,
And they had a TV, but the TV was only playing videos, you know. So they tried to make an antenna with a cloth hanger, right, somehow or other. But they couldn't get it to work, you know. And then, like, you know, they couldn't see the match. And then, you know, the whole city of Paris just roared, you know, oh! And we knew, 1-0 for France. And there was another one, another, after 10 minutes again, roar! The whole city, loud, you know, 2-0, right? And then there was a boo, 2-1. So, in the end, we got the score, you know, 3-1 was the final score, I think. France won that year and got the World Cup or something. And that was a big thing. Yeah, so it's hard to give it up. I mean, certain things, so many things are hard to give up. Sometimes 4 principles turn into 3.5. that has also happened. What to do? But anyway, keep on investing in devotional service. You know, the more we keep on investing in service, the more strength we'll get. And one day, we will do it. We will do it. And time also, time works in your favor, you know, like at one point you realize, boy, I'm getting old. Yeah? Now, of course, you know, it's a big thing to say old, but I'm getting more mature. I'm slowly getting a little older. Yeah? I mean, with one foot in the grave, you know. So as you're getting older, you tend to get more serious. It becomes more easy to give up these material attachments, because you also realize I'm running out of time. Because we'll never get serious until we want to be. You know, at one point, it has to come to the point where we understand, like, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it. One time I was on an island in Greece, on the side of Turkey, and I had rented a little house at the base of the beach. I came out of the house in the morning, and suddenly there was a soldier with a gun and a bayonet on it as well, which he pointed at my stomach, and he said, "Stop," which I did. And then he said, "Mines." They filled the whole beach with mines. So there was a staircase going up the hill, and I went up and I saw soldiers everywhere. Overnight, the army had mobilized and they had taken over the whole city. Tanks everywhere, in the war zone, you know. And there was no more traffic out. Anyway, I was determined to get out of there. So, you know, we're talking about with the army commander, if we were allowed to walk. I said, "Yes, yes." He gave permission to walk. We got a tour guide, you know, paid him, and some 20 people, we walked some 25 kilometers over a hill to the port of that island. And then there was a boat. There was a boat. And, you know, we immediately went to the boat office to check if there was place on the boat, you know. But then in the office there was a lot of talk, and it wasn't sure if the boat was gonna go or wasn't gonna go, and like this. So lots of people were saying, "Oh, I don't know if, you know, if I'm gonna spend my money on that boat, because I may lose my money, it may not go." I didn't hesitate. I bought a ticket straight away, immediately. And I got a ticket. Because I thought, that boat's gonna go for sure, you know. All these people are stranded here, they're gonna let them go, right? And then, you know, and then the boat went, and I was on the boat. And I saw all these people who were hesitating and who didn't buy the ticket, and they were standing on the shore, and I was waving at them as our boat was sailing away, you know. And I hoped they had a good time on that island, but I was happy to go on and get out.
Don't miss the boat. Miss the boat. Don't. Yeah.
Other question?
12 more minutes. Four questions.
So 12 more minutes?
For the question, yeah, 4:45 I stop and then you get prasanna.
Okay. Is it possible to get kirtan during
I should get a shirt that says kirtan machine.
It's a small shoe to fit.
Huh?
Food is already in, just have to put the heel in.
We'll see. No more questions, huh? it's a strike. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. So 4:45.
I think she got.
Please.
Will you be around later often in kirtan?
No, it's okay.
Speak with you?
Ask now.
Okay. Sorry.
No, go for it. Okay.
I was going to ask, to one who has not necessarily surrendered to Krishna. I know you wrote a blog recently about how to increase your surrender. I read it, but I was thinking, what if one has not even reached the point of surrender? I mean,
yeah.
For me, for instance, I'm from a Christian background, right?
Yeah.
And having to have come to Krishna consciousness, now I sort of look at Krishna as a different sort of God, if that makes sense. It's like I'm still trying to adapt the whole person personal kind of
understand,
level. So
Yeah, I came from, I was kind of quite independent before, and then, you know, a whole movement and a church and all that, I had quite some allergy to that. Yeah. So we all have our condition, absolutely. So what to do about that? Well, you know, I'll tell you another story. One time, there was a temple, and there were deities, and we wanted to install them, but we needed more space. And in the house, there was a wall in the middle, so we wanted to break that wall. But it was a supporting wall that held the roof, you know. So if you break walls like that, the whole house comes down, right? So that looked like a complicated thing to do. So we spoke to a builder, and the builder basically explained, he said that on the wall you built up some portion, and then you make a beam on top of that, and then you hang the roof on that beam, on the side walls. And then said the way you hang the roof is you just do it with little strips of wood. You just take little strips of wood. And he said, and you just nail those on. I said, nails, shouldn't we screw? No? I mean, when the whole roof is hanging on. He said, no, nails will do. That's okay. He said, you know, these little strips of wood are like, we call them soldiers. Little soldiers. He said, like, you know, each one of them is not very strong. He said, but all together they make an army, and that is very strong. So surrender works like that. Don't worry about what you cannot do. Do what you can do. There's so much that you can do. Do all those things. And then if you first do all those things that you can do, then that will give you strength to do things that before you couldn't do. And that's how it works. Because everyone can surrender to something. Like taking prasadam, I could handle that. Yeah? On my first time in the temple, that I could handle. The kirtan, I also could.
But when they bowed down to Tulasi, that I couldn't handle. that was too much. I was really gone. And now we're going to bow to a plank. And that was something, you know, yeah, that was a bit much for me. And so that took a little longer. Like that, you know. Or just bowing down on the ground anyway. The first time that I finally did it, I was so self-conscious, I was sure that everybody in the temple room knew that it was my first time. They all know that it's my first time, they're all watching and they're all thinking, ah, look at him. Even when they're bowing down all the time, still I thought they know it's my first time. And they all said, look at him bowing down. So that was hard. That was hard. But eventually I did that. Satsarup Maharaj, he also describes, his name was Steve before. So he was still Steve and he was a social worker. And then he, in those days, the temple, there were hardly anybody and it was just Swamiji and a few devotees. And one day, his boss insisted that he would work during the lunch break. So he was totally fried because it was Miss Prasadam, you know. So, and he's thinking, who can I ring in the temple to save me a plate of prasadam? He couldn't think of anyone, and the only one he could think of was Swamiji. So he called Swamiji, and he asked, Swamiji, could I have to work, and I have to work overtime, and could I ask for a favor? Prabhupada said, yes, yes. Swamiji, could you save me a plate of prasadam? No problem. Right? And then, okay, he came and everyone was gone, but Swamiji was there and he was before Swamiji. And then said, Swamiji, did you save? And Swamiji said, yes, yes, yes. And he brought the plate of prasadam and then put it down in front of him on the floor. And that was too much for Steve. Steve was thinking, on the floor? On the floor? I'm not a dog. He's used to tables. But then he saw how Prabhupada, how he was smiling while he offered. And then he felt so guilty that he offered obeisances. He bowed down to him for the first time. Just then. Like that. So all these things, you know, and it all adds up. And all these things give you the strength. So the little surrender of today, all the little surrenders that we do, they give us strength for more surrender. Can't surrender all at once. Step by step. And sometimes, you know, people go forward a bit and they go a bit backward. Anyway, go forward again. A bit back. Go more forward than you go backward and you'll get there also. It takes a little longer, but you'll get there eventually. Well, I got 5 minutes left, okay.
Harmonium. I'll sing for 5 minutes.